let's start out like we have the last few podcasts, and we talk about if you could, we'll put artificial constraints on ourselves, and we'll say, hey, if you could only tell somebody one thing you learned from listening to Jocko podcast number 14, what would that one thing be?
Woo, jumping right into it with the no foreplay today. So I'm actually online now trying to get the exact numbers, but the book covered in 14 said that there was a specific battle where 58,000 people died in one day, in like the first day, which is, I don't know. I wanted to see how that like ranked among known casualty rates in, you know, ever. It was just like a mind-blowing number. Then it continued on. It was 3 million after just 3 months. Or a million, excuse me. A million after 3 months. I can't remember if it was 58 or 48, and that's what I wanted to confirm. I think it was 48,000.
Well, I wrote – I actually took notes on that part too. So it was Jocko talking. He's like, listen, let me give some context here. 58,000 Americans were killed in Vietnam. And he said in this battle, which I assume he's talking about the battle that Ernst Jünger is writing about in his book Storm of Steel. And I texted you this earlier, and we talked a little bit before we started recording the podcast, but now I fully understand why the book is called, after listening to the podcast, why the book is called Storm of Steel, because that's exactly what it was. But Jocko was saying, listen, there's 58,000 Americans killed in the entire Vietnam War. He goes, in this battle, there were 60,000 killed in the first day, and then in 3 months, a million killed. And I love, I actually wrote down, I didn't write it down. I typed it into my phone.
You love that?
But no, of course I don't love that. I loved how Echo Charles put it, because I love, you know, Echo Charles plays his role so well, in my opinion, on the Jocko podcast. But he interjected. He goes, that's the entire state of Hawaii.
Yeah.
Because he's from Hawaii.
Because we all relate to that.
No, but like that's a, I mean, there's a million people wiped off the face of the earth in 90 days.
Yeah. I mean, that is, that's like a, like a Justin Bieber concert in one day. I don't know.
Did you wait a minute?
I don't know who fills up those.
Did you just say Justin Bieber? I don't think that's his last name.
Yeah, he's from Justin Bieber. He's from Colorado. You don't know him. very popular.
So I'm looking over all my notes, and I'm trying to figure out like, okay, if I can only say one thing that stuck out to me. I guess it's towards the end of the book review part of Jocko's podcast, and it talked about there's a continuation. It's separated by about 20 minutes, and it said a bullet shot from some distance had punched through my helmet and only brushed my skull. And so what that made me think of, I went and tried to learn a little bit more about Ernst Jünger before we recorded this podcast, and I was surprised. If you go to his Wikipedia page, he lived to 102 years old. Yeah. He was born in 1895 and died in 1998. And not only did he get shot in the head, so you're talking about an inch more, or half an inch. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, he died like right when we were getting into high school.
Yeah.
just to put it into like perspective.
I think that's time. The year we met, maybe. Yeah. Maybe the year after.
That's when he checked out.
Yeah, and so like I just think it really illustrates like how precious and frail life is, that a half of an inch could have potentially robbed, you know, how old was he? He's probably in his 20s when he's fighting, so 80 years of his life. And he talked about a little while later that he got shot again. And what I found, I want to read the book because I found his writing, at least told in Jocko's voice, very, very poetic.
Yeah, wasn't this like the best, like visually conceptualized kind of the way he wrote was just like
they put images in your mind. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it really did. It's just like the yellow faced Frenchman, and like, you know what I mean? Like
describing how many rats were eating all the dead bodies by saying it looked like a carpet. Like a carpet of rats. And that he talked about the, like, think about how many albino rats have you seen in your life, Rob?
Outside of pet, outside of pet shops, none.
Yeah, yeah, none. Me too. And they're saying that the albino rats, very small percentage of overall rat population, but he saw there were so many rats that he saw, you could see albino rats constantly. And I thought Jocko pointing that out was really illustrative too. But this part, I'm just going to read this part he talked about where he thought he died and then his response. So I'm going to skip over some of the sentences. But he said, "It had got me at last. I felt the bullet taking away my life. I had felt death's hand once before, but this time his grip was firmer and more determined." That spooked me out. "I was convinced it was all over. Strangely, that moment is one of the very few in my life in which I am able to say I was utterly happy. I felt surprise and disbelief that it was to end there and then." And we know, obviously, you know, he didn't die. He thought he was going to die. He talks about how he was surprisingly, like, tranquil experience. What's the word I'm looking for there?
Tranquil.
Help me out, Rob.
Tranquil is just fine, man.
Oh, and just so you guys know, if you ever hear a dog in the background, that's the mascot of Jocko Academy. The picture of the cover page of our podcast is Rob's dog Tonks. So
that only barks when we're recording.
She's a welcome third party, though. I think we have to, you know, people love dogs, so she needs to be part of the podcast.
You know, what's really funny, and I wish I could, show anybody listening to this, that I have this little miniature cannon that's kind of like Civil War, World War I-esque.
Of course you would. Of course you have something like that.
It's real. It actually fires. It's cool as fuck. I haven't fired yet, but...
Just knowing you, it doesn't surprise me, but what were you going
to
say?
But she's out by the window with that thing next to her, just, like, defending the line. You know,
there you go.
There. Yeah, so...
She's holding the line. But I want to talk to you, going back to the reason I say I would only pick... If I could only say one thing, it would be just the, you know, how close multiple times he came to death, and then he winds up surviving and living a very, very long life.
Yeah, we love
and
I don't stories.
Know... Yeah, I guess it's... It's because we're so entrenched now. We're on week 14 of this military history course that me and you are endeavoring on together. But I also think it was stoked because I saw the National Geographic documentary. It's in theaters right now, in limited release, Free Solo. And it's about this guy named Alex Honnold, who he's been on a bunch of podcasts, but he's the world's leading free soloist. And what that means is he climbs mountains with nothing but his hands
and feet.
It
means he's a freak. He's an absolute freak.
And so... practicing for years and years, he finally one day with a camera crew walks up to El Capitan in Yosemite and climbs 3,000 feet in the air with just his hands and feet and some chalk. The reason I bring that up is because in the documentary, people are like, you know, why are you doing this? You could die at any moment. And he makes a very succinct point that, although I find true, I think is very counterintuitive if you look at how people live their lives. He's like, yeah, but anybody can die at any time. Yet that, what he's saying, is factually true, you know? Mm-hmm. Yet we live as if we're going to go on forever, you know? And at least he understands that. He's in the moment. He has to concentrate because he knows one false move and he dies. As opposed to, like, wouldn't you rather approach life that way as opposed to thinking you're going to live forever and being kind of careless about your time? Does that make any sense, considering like what we just heard?
He actually put it in a better perspective, or I guess he elaborated it less succinctly, that people are more likely to die doing something more casual than at the high stakes because you're just more tuned in to what you're doing. That anybody in his field of just mountain climbing and rock climbing hasn't died doing like pushing the boundaries. They've died doing something they've done before because they kind of get relaxed in the process. And I always thought that was like kind of reminiscent of like you know, in my kitchen days, is like you never cut yourself with a freshly sharpened knife. You always cut yourself with an old dull knife because you don't respect it as much. So how that applies to war, I don't know.
Well, you know, it's funny you brought that up because right after I saw the documentary, I went home and I started watching more, like learning more about it. And I just found two guys were speed climbing. They were best friends. They're in their 40s. They've been climbing for 25 years. They were on about 600 feet up on El Capitan. And they they had done it a million times. Like you said, they wind up not putting the proper safety measures in, and they were tied together. So when one of them slipped, he pulled his friend off with him, and there was other climbers below them, so they saw them fall. And they were saying that, you know, they had done the route a million times. Now they were so good at it, they were trying to beat like a speed record, and because they were trying to increase the speed, they were actually becoming unsafe, as opposed to, so it kind of illustrates your point. It's like a microcosm of your point in the sense that, like, Alex was extremely focused. He knew what the risks were, where these guys were unfortunately overconfident, and it cost them their lives, you know, yeah, falling 600 or 700 feet. So
there's a good story in there. There's definitely a good lesson. But in war, there's too much randomness where you can prepare, you can set up for all the scenarios that you may think that are going to happen, but still there's a touch of randomness that don't matter how careful you are, you could catch one in the head.
Okay, see, we're like, our minds are melding because we've done so many podcasts together. Before we did Jocko Academy, we had another podcast called A Podcast About Podcast, which we did like 150 episodes where we just talk about podcasts we like. That segue was perfect because this next thing I want to talk to you about is something, this ongoing discussion we've had for the past few weeks, because you and I both have read this book recently. It's called Guide to a Good Life, The Ancient Art of Stoic Joy. And I found, we always talk about how like Jocko is kind of stoic in his description. And so I wrote a note to myself. I said, more Jocko stoicism. So he's like, how do you deal with the randomness of war? You just literally were talking about that. And this is Jocko's answer. He says, I'm going to control what I can control. And if you can't control it, or excuse me, if I can't control it, I'm not going to worry about it. You can't worry about the random sniper shot. You can do everything you can to mitigate it. You can keep moving. You can stay behind cover. You can come up in the same spot over and over again. But you can't control it. So that book that me and you just read, like, it spends like an entire like two chapters on the difference between things that are under our complete control, things that are out of our control, and then things we somewhat control.
Yeah.
And it's building this whole philosophy over, listen, if what Jocko's saying there, if I can't control it, I'm not going to worrying about it serving you no purpose. So you've got to break your mind out of that like rut and that routine that many people get in. And there's a, if you don't mind, let me jump into the segue myself into something he said. And he's talking about, like, you know, we've talked about in the podcast before, me and you were on FaceTime the other day talking about, you know, Jocko said many times that he was born to be a commando, I think is the words he used, but one war he would refuse to fight in would be World War I. And he starts out talking about that, but I want to get to his main point, which happens about 32 minutes into Jocko Podcast 14. And he says, these guys didn't understand leaders should listen to feedback from their subordinates. What do you think of this plan? We tried it 12 times in the last month and a half. We're going to try it again tomorrow. We're going to get up at the whistle and charge at the enemy machine guns. It hasn't worked yet. We think it might work tomorrow. And then Jocko was talking about, no one figured this out. Listen to your people and listen to your brain. And in my opinion, he's talking about thinking from first principles, which is a huge... one of the best ideas that I've found over the last decade that I think has fundamentally changes people's lives. He says, don't get stuck in a mental rut. If you can send millions of humans to their death because you can't think your way out of this strategy, you can't come up with a new way to execute something, that shows you how trapped in a box your brain can get. Your buddies too. When you feed off each other with the same ideas, with your ancestral ideas, which he's referenced multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
So a whole thing, why do humans, I'm guilty of this all the time. I worry about constantly. I'm a worried, a high stress person in general, you know? Well, you definitely know that. But why am I worrying about something I can't control? And I love how Jocko illustrated that for us. He's like, listen, if humans can send a million people to their deaths and not realize, oh shit, I have a bad strategy here. This isn't working. This is the other 12 times we've just killed 100,000 people. Why are we doing this again?
Yeah.
That shows you, you know, a part of human nature. It's a flashlight into human behavior that you should gaze upon and try to learn from.
Yeah, and he taps into his Napoleon
Yes.
what were they called? The Napoleon maxims. He tapped into that. It's just like, yeah, it's, well, listen to the podcast. But this is, I still think we talked about this a little bit yesterday, that this is kind of that transitional war where it became more of a less a numbers game in later on and more like a strategy game when it became more more technology. Like this is a horrible war where, you know, like medical advancements are not quite there, and you just have to throw numbers because you're going to expect high casualty. And I don't know why they're like, all right, we're going to wake up, blow the whistle, and you're going to run towards the machine guns. Like, why that didn't go, you know what, this isn't working, and no one ever corrected it.
Wasn't it Dan Carlin who talked about in Blueprint to Armageddon, where he's like, listen, they had highly advanced machine guns. This is the first war that had that kind of technology.
Yeah.
And yet you had some of the people fighting in this, they would like arrive to battle on horseback dressed in like full regalia with swords.
Yep.
He's like, what are you doing?
No, if you see the footage of a lot of the trench warfare, like behind the lines, there's a ton of horses. They're still pulling equipment by horses and donkeys. Like it's a perfect example of the transition. As you know, they just threw numbers at the problem rather than throwing, you know, the new technology to it. But I don't know. I think we learned that lesson, but it just kind of sucks that like people died to learn that lesson and repeatedly over and over and over again.
So yeah, you know what? It was really spooky to me is how he talked about there were so many dead people, and so that they had to leave the bodies. So I think the exact phrase he said, the French had spent months in the proximity of their fallen comrades without burying them. So imagine the stress that you're under. You're probably in your late teens to early 20s. And not only are you in a fight to the death, but you're surrounded by the decaying corpses of people you knew and maybe loved at one point. And you see the entire decomposition cycle. They're saying that some of these people were dead for months. So you're seeing it from, you know, the time they die to rigor mortis to everything.
Yeah, and I mean,
can't imagine that.
If you're in charge of that trench and it just is just flooded with the dead, wouldn't you want to like kind of figure out like, I mean I don't know, I can't assume that they knew everything that they knew because of what they assume shell shock was back in the day, but like I would want to remove the bodies just for morale of my own guys. Like everybody wants to go home, whether it's in a box.
Yeah, I don't think they could though. I don't think they could. I mean, like you're gonna
because they're constantly
get up.
Engaged. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so there, you just said something about shell shock. Jocko talked about. He's like, we're a lot smarter now. He's like, they didn't believe in shell shock. That if you came home from war or after battle and you didn't have physical like you weren't physically injured, they thought you were like. I think in the book he says they called the people that had what we I guess determined should be shell shock now
call
as they
pussy.
Were playing in, no they were playing insane like they were faking insanity. You said something that you
that,
saw
wait, wait,
something
before you move okay. on like that was like a close tie to like the one thing, but we talked about it before. Uh-huh. But he talked about how this guy was fraying insane, but he was corrected by I wanted to look up that word, but a buffet to the rib. I'm assuming that's just hitting somebody with the butt of your gun and just like,
oh,
all right, get back out there. Like, okay, he's corrected. Like, he's faking it. Like, I don't know. Jocko was even like, I doubt this guy was faking it. I think he was just slowly losing it and then eventually snapped. But you can't just hit a guy and be like, all right, get out there. I bet you that guy died.
That's, yeah,
I you mean, know, like he's well, he's ineffective. Like,
there's a good chance he did. I don't know. I just wonder how much of you know they're such young people and they're going through such a bizarre once in a lifetime experience, even kind of once in as many centuries. Because I don't think that has been repeated. At least when you got into World War II, they knew you know you kind of knew what to expect. Because I love that line.
Kind of.
Quoting Dan, I heard on Dan Carlin's podcast that was quoting somebody else, but he's like, the 20-year gap between World War One and World War Two wasn't. He's like, it wasn't a ceasefire or something like that. It was a intermission. And I killed. I just destroyed that quote. He said it way better than I did, but I was like, they kind of just reloaded. But I want to switch gears real quick because you had mentioned something earlier that you were watching something. It kind of ties into the fact that like they weren't really prepared humans, maybe never human in human history had ever gone through these experiences at the scale they're going through. And it kind of like temporarily jars you out of your fundamental human nature. And then after a lull in the battle, you were telling me how eventually they stop fighting each other. Do you want to talk about that?
No, in the beginning of the trenches, there was a phenomenon experienced that they called live and let live. Okay,
what's that?
It's basically when like two people that have no reason to kill each other get along. In short, right? Like they had a camaraderie with the enemy because they didn't perceive them as their enemy yet. And this was a problem for commanding officers, is that they were getting frustrated that, like, you know, they're sharing whiskey, they're sharing bread, they're talking to each other, they're humanizing, right? Like, it's not war. And that was, for the most part, a huge problem. So commanding officers would get orders to, all right, you need to just put up a sniper and just, like, take out a guy, or, like, you need to charge that and bring me back the barbed wire that they used to protect their, because the German wire was very distinct and you can tell that it was it, but they just found like a bundle of the wire and they were just sending it back to command, like bit by bit. They're like, see, we were there, sending them a little bit of like this whole, roll of wire. They're faking it. Wow. And, the one story that was really cool is like, I can't remember, and I'm a slaughter. I think it was like English and French, and there was also a German side that the Germans threw over a rock saying, hey, we got ordered that we have to send a 40-pound shell over, but don't worry, we're going to blow a whistle before it hits so you guys can kind of take cover. And
that's an amazing story.
And that's the live and let live. We're like, hey, we'll give you a heads up, but why don't you give us a heads up? Like, none of us want to die for this. Like when you think about how World War One actually, like, progress to what it was, I couldn't imagine these guys like, yeah, we're gonna fucking avenge Franz Ferdinand or like whatever conflict. Like, it's a very complicated war, so I don't imagine these guys to conceive everything. They were probably just drafted and thrown out there, and why would they want to die for something they don't understand when they can see humans? Like they were actually congregating around like dinner time. Like, they would see the blue smoke from like the German camps, and the French would go over there and say, hey man, what's up?
Yeah, but they just wanted to be social creatures.
Yeah, I thought this was fascinating, but
so how do they get them to finally fight? You said they just wind up killing people randomly, and it was like, hey,
they followed orders. They would eventually kill guys, and it would strike a chord with the enemy, saying, all right. Then it just became like an eye for an eye thing. Like, you killed our guy, all right, we'll kill your guy, and then you have like this.
It keeps this building.
This reciprocity of just like killing each other rather than mutual respect. And I thought that was like we hear about the Christmas of 1916 or whatever it is where they stop, like, but there was like a lot going on like that before, and it was a problem to people who actually wanted to kill the war through casualties, or I'm sorry, win the war. But we hear stories of that, and I think that Christmas one was discussed somewhere. I think there's actually a Jocko episode on it coming down the pipe. It's deep in there though.
I remember seeing the pictures specifically. You just said something that was interesting about how, like, you know, they're drafted. They don't really know the intricacies of how this war began. I started re-listening to Blueprint of Armageddon. In the chance that you're listening to this podcast and you haven't heard Hardcore Histories,
one of the greatest starts to a podcast ever.
Well, that's what I was going to say. So I think the whole series is like 20 hours long. I think it's five or six different installments over like 2.5 years. But the first hour of the first episode is just, I mean, so Dan does a really great job of setting the table of all the different intricacies of, like, you know, how does a world war start in the Balkans?
But he starts the series going, what do you think the biggest coincidence of all time is?
He made the point. He's like, like, people have a hard time believing that one person can make a difference. And he compared Gabriel Princip. Thank you. Whatever. I don't know how to pronounce it.
We had
to he's talking about Lee Harvey Oswald. He's like, if you believe, if that is actually true, that there was just a lone gunman that killed Kennedy, he's like, the guy did nothing his whole life of note, like worthy of noting. But he had an experience, and Dan put it in like a creepy way that really hit home, hit his point. He's like, he changed the who the president was instantly. He goes, how many people have ever done that? And I'm like, holy shit, that's one way to, that's a hell of a way to look at it. But to your point,
don't get any ideas, anybody.
No, of course, yeah, of course not. Now I think now they have tons of security, but it's just I never even thought of it like that. Like obviously, you know, he killed the president, and you know like what's gonna happen next. I never heard it described in that manner in using those words. That again, when people use certain words, just like when you read them from a book or a great podcast, it really throws like an image into your mind and kind of sears that in there. But the reason I bring all this up,
he does it brilliantly as like this entire war. Is started because a driver took a wrong turn.
Yeah.
And that's what and that's what I say. Like, this thing, I can't even speak. It just escalates to the point where you're in a fucking trench with bodies everywhere just going, what are we doing here?
Like, well, this is why I brought that up, because Jocko talks about that. He's like, listen, one of the things that makes this book so powerful, he goes, it's just about the fighting. And he was comparing it to his own time in Iraq, and he's like, it reflects very well what it feels like to be on the front lines. And he said, at that time, when you're on the front lines, he's talking about the experiences these young kids are going through in World War I, to your point. He's like, politics doesn't matter. The broader outcome of the war doesn't matter. So then you could also interject that why the war started doesn't matter at that point.
No, he goes, doesn't matter.
Just what the only thing that matters is just what we are doing in this trench. And that kind of like singular focus he was talking about is when your life is on the line is what a lot of people that he talks about in the podcast, that the people that have been through war don't want people to go through war more than anybody else. You know, it's kind of counterintuitive.
No,
but he says what they miss is that focus. And then I hate to bring it back to like the movie Free Solo, but I really feel like that's what he's getting. He's like, you have to be focused. Like, there is something about a specific branch of humans that thrive in an environment where if they're not focused, their life ends. And I think that is a fascinating part to watch a documentary or to listen to a podcast or to read a book about, because again, it's this wide spectrum of humanity that I think is so interesting to study.
Yeah, and it's hard to study from afar. Like those experiences, you have to be in them to truly learn the lessons. But I'm happy the way we're doing it too. So,
yeah, I'm not going into those. Yeah. So that's it.
We're not going anywhere where there's mustard gas and things like that. Like, because the World War I definitely escalated to the cruelest war that we've probably ever seen with the lack of medical support.
Well, let's just end on this. This is before Jocko gets into the book. He says, in my mind, World War I was the most brutal of all wars, where tactics, intelligence, and strategy did not matter.
Did not matter.
It was attrition and death and horror. Yeah. So if you guys want to learn more, I listened to the sample on Audible of Storm of Steel by Ernst Younger. It's a very highly reviewed book. People seem to love it. He won all kinds of awards for his writing. It's available on Audible. And if you want to listen to it for free, there's a link we'll leave in the show notes. You can get it in your podcast player. We can actually get 2 free audiobooks for trying Audible. And even if you don't keep your subscription, you cancel it, you get those 2 books for free and you get to keep them forever, which is really cool. Besides Storm of Steel, do you have any other books that you've read lately that you'd recommend to the people listening?
Well, there's several. I'm jumping around a lot of books. I'm still reading the Professor, the Banker, and the Suicide King. I'm halfway through Stoic Joy. There's so many books out there, and I have Ryan Holiday's book on In Queue, The Obstacle Is
Which
Away.
One? Oh, okay.
So I'm looking forward to that. I read The Swerve not too long ago. It was an awesome book about.
What's The Swerve? I haven't heard that.
It's we totally talked about this. There's no way I didn't talk to you about it. It's about the rediscovering of Lucretius after centuries of just kind of being in a moldy monastery.
No, I don't. I'm looking at Amazon right now. I do not remember talking about it with you.
Oh, really?
I remember that. I hear that name before, but I don't know why.
Greenblatt?
No, Lucretius.
Lucretius is, essentially a poet, but it just blows my mind that he was talking about like atoms and things of nature that were way before, you know, these things were commonly accepted, and mostly just because of Christian book burning and just knowledge suppression. So, oh
God, the product description sounds amazing.
Yeah, that book. It's like, the book was fun.
The thrilling story of discovery in which one manuscript plucked from 1,000 years of neglect changed the course of human thought and made possible the world as we know it. Yeah, I'm fat. That sounds amazing because I love that the ideas that were discovered, you know, centuries ago, and that sometimes they get lost and then we rediscover them. I find that fascinating.
Shout out to Poggio, the guy who he found himself with a ton of time after, because he was a part of Pope John 23rd, who is pretty much the only disgraced pope in he was pretty bad. Like, he was what was his singular thing, like it, but anyway, it was in the negative. So he got off the papal see. He was in the court, and then he was just like, I have all this time. And this guy loved books. He was a transcriber. Mm-hmm. So he was like, he just became like this book hunter that went to old monasteries, because those were the people who were actually like, they love books. Like, they chained their books to the wall so no one would take them, right? So like, if you're going to find old books, you got to go to a monastery where they just recopy it every few hundred years on this, back when paper was an animal product.
What was his name?
Poggio, P-O-G-G-I-O, okay, and then...
I'm pretty sure in the history of podcasts, no one has ever said shout out to Poggio. So we're making history here. All right, man. I'm going to check that out. I'm going to download the sample on the Kindle, and maybe I have two more Audible credits. I just bought more. So maybe I'll check this one out too, because the description sounds fascinating. And if you guys want to hear more of me talking into a microphone about the history of entrepreneurship, mispronouncing everything because I can't talk correctly, I read a biography of people that have built companies every week, and I talk about it on a podcast called Founders.
It's a great podcast.
You can just search Founders Podcast in any podcast app, and I'll leave links to it in the show notes if you're interested. And we'll be back next week with Jocko 15.
Yes.
All right, man. All right, Rob. Yes. I will talk to you later.
Keep your head down, brother.
Bye.